Good evening. Welcome to part 8 of Hilchos Bishul. Last week, we talked about the ladle controversy. Machlokes, whether a ladle that I spoon out, that I ladle out from my soup pots, does that ladle itself constitute an additional kli? And therefore my soup bowl is a kli shlishi already? Or no, since it's just a ladle, it's an intermediary, you know, thing that just gets you from point A to point B, it's meaningless. And therefore my soup bowl is a klisheni. The soup pot is a klirishon. Soup bowl is a klisheni. And it's going to be very important because I want to know if I could put water into my soup to cool it off for my kids. I want to know if I could put challah into my soup because I like little bits of challah or matzah in my soup. For those of you who don't do gebrachts, so you put your matzah in your soup. So we saw the machlokas, and we added at the end of last week that since it's a machlokas, and since the whole question of cooking something that's already been cooked is itself a machlokas, so listen to the following scenario. This is what we did at the end of last week. I have soup in my bowl, just a little bit left. Now I want to go for seconds. But the soup in my bowl is already cooled off. You know, there were guests at the table, so I couldn't like slurp the last licks out. So there's a little bit of soup on the bottom of my bowl. It's cold. I'm not allowed to heat it up with the water of a kli rishon. I can't put water from an urn directly upon it, could I? But here, since I'm using a ladle, which itself is a machlokas, that it might already be a kli sheni, a kli rishon or a kli sheni, and the whole question is, could I heat up this soup that's already been previously boiled when it was originally boiled? That's why I ate it 5 minutes ago, because it was boiled up soup. So now I have two chumras. I'm not going to be machmir doubly. To assume that I'm not going to say, oh, let's consider the ladle a kli rishon and let's consider this to be a problem of cooking up that cold soup. No, since I have two leniencies to rely upon, maybe the ladle's already a kli sheni. Maybe the soup was already cooked. And ein bishul achar bishul, even though it's cold, I'll be able to be lenient. And yes, I can, halach lemaisa, says the Mishnah Berurah, pour my ladle of hot soup on top of whatever cold soup is left on the bottom of my bowl. That's the first leniency regarding the machlokas, how to determine the status of a ladle. The second leniency that the post can point out, that the Mishnah Berurah himself points out, is if you remember, we said many weeks ago that we don't like putting baked goods into a kli sheni. So if I have crumbs of matzah or crumbs of challah, I cannot put it into my soup pot. If I would pour my soup pot into a bowl or a tureen, I couldn't put my matzah into there. It's a kli sheni. Once it's a kli shlishi there, you're already allowed to put your crumbs of challah or your crumbs of matzah. What about a ladle? A ladle is somewhere between that kli rishon and somewhere between that kli sheni. So once again, since there are those who are mekel in terms of assuming that there's no issue of cooking baked goods once they have already been baked, and there are those who assume that a ladle is already itself a kli sheni, and therefore by the time it gets to the bowl, it's a kli shlishi. If we marry these two kulas together, then, let me rephrase that. We don't have to be machmir in everything. We could be lenient and assume I have two reasons to be lenient, so we can be lenient. Therefore, I could assume that the ladle is already kli sheni, and therefore the bowl is a kli shlishi, because anyway, some opinions hold that I'm allowed to warm up, that I'm allowed to cook previously baked items, and therefore, halacha lemaisa, your bowl of soup that you have in front of you, that you ladled into, you can put matzah or challah into that. We did mention that about 5 weeks ago, but here it just comes up again. Yes? Excellent question. Dunkin' Donuts. Donuts are not a good example because donuts are fried. But Dunkin' chocolate chip cookies, excellent question. If you made your coffee, your instant coffee in a kli sheni, which is permitted, or your instant tea in a kli sheni, which is permitted, you are not permitted to dunk your chocolate chip cookie or your piece of cake into that kli sheni. Excellent point. Yes. Good. That's the end of the discussion about ladles. Any questions about ladles? That was most of the interviews from last week, and then we just added a single point about once it's ladled, you can put in things that were baked. What I want to do now, for about five 5, 6, 7 minutes, is do a quick review. There are a lot of details about adding cold water to hot water and hot water to cold water. What I'm going to do now is going to give a systematic review. Instead of talking just about Kli Rishon, just about Kli Sheni, just about ladles, I'm going to give a systematic review for 5 minutes about all of the different scenarios of adding cold water to hot water. Okay? That'll just take about 5 minutes, and then we're going to go to talk in depth about the halachas of stirring foods that are on the flame, off the flame. That'll be after this quick review. So what are the halachas of adding water, cold to hot or hot to cold? So let's start with, I have cold water, and I want to cool off my hot water. So I have a soup that I want to cool off. I have tea or coffee that's too hot. I want to add some cold water. What's the halacha? So if I have a kli rishon, if I add cold water to that, it's going to be boiling that little bit of cold water. And that will, of course, be usr. If I have a kli sheni, so even though we said that kli sheni might be able to cook things, and we're not really sure what kli sheni has the potential, the capacity to cook, however, the Gemara told us that water is not one of those things that are delicate. Water cannot be cooked anywhere except a kli rishon, and therefore, halacha lemaisa, you are permitted to put cold water, and for that matter, I assume an ice cube should be no different. I didn't see it inside, but I assume. And therefore, I should be able to put cold water into a kli sheni. So therefore, if you have a hot cup of coffee, a hot cup of tea, it's too hot for you, or you want to give to your little brother and he's going to burn his tongue, but he still insists on tasting your coffee, you can put cold water into that kli sheni. What about if you're going to pour, let's say I have a kli rishon or a kli sheni. Let's talk about a kli rishon. I have a kli rishon, but there's just a little bit of hot water in it. And I want to pour a lot of cold. If I pour a lot of cold, the net result is going to be hot water or cold water. The net result is cold water, so you're not cooking anything. So of course that's going to be mutter. However, the poskim say if you do add a lot of cold to a little bit of hot, again it's mutter, make sure you pour that lot of cold quickly in one shot. Because if you slowly drizzle your large quantity of cold water into the hot water, that first little bit of cold water that enters the hot water is itself going to get heated up. Going to get warmed up until you add the spoke. And then, of course, as water comes in, the heat will diffuse and it won't be yet so spell. But the first little bit will be a problem. So therefore, if you do add a lot of cold water to a little hot water, do it quickly. That was our discussion of adding cold water to hot water. Now let's flip the scenario and let's talk about putting hot into cold. So the easiest case would be I have a hot water urn and I have some cold water on the bottom of my cup. Let's talk about cold water. It just makes life easier. So, if you have hot water from a kli rishon, of course it's usur to have that pour directly into cold water. But what happens if you pour a little bit of hot water into a lot of cold water? Let's say you want to make a baby bottle. So you take water from the tap or water from the fridge that you boil, and it's very cold. And the baby's not going to take it, it's very cold. So you want to add a little bit of hot water. Can I just pour water from the urn directly into, let's say I have a baby bottle that's 2/3 full. Can I fill the top third with boiling water straight from the urn? Or do I have to have an intermediary klisheni to do that? So here, since when I add that hot water, it will not end up cooking anything because it's going into a lot of cold water, that will be permitted because nothing is turning into yatzladispo. The hot water that I'm pouring on top of the cold water is not heating up the cold water on the bottom, and therefore it will be permitted to add a little bit of hot water to a lot of cold water because nothing's getting heated up. So based on what we're saying, that again, if a normal scenario we have a little bit of cold on the bottom and hot, we can't put hot into that from a kli rishon. Again, it's if you have a wet cup, a cup that you just rinsed out, you have to make sure you dry it before you put it to fill under the urn. We did point out once before that if the droplets that are there at the bottom of the cup is from your first cup of coffee or your first cup of tea that had already been cooked once before, so then there is room to be lenient and to allow the hot water to come directly into this pre-cooked little bit on the bottom, because as we said, many opinions hold ein bishel achar bishel. Even though it's liquid and it's cold, some opinions still hold there's nothing wrong heating that up. And even if we're machmir, come on, what are you doing? You're cooking. Anyone thinks you're actually cooking up the you know, that little film or more than a film, that little puddle on the bottom of your cup, you're not cooking it. You just want another cup of coffee, and there happens to be something in your way on the bottom. That's not called cooking. So because it's not real serious cooking, and we could join to that, we could be mitztarif, the fact that there are opinions who hold that once it's already been cooked in the first place, there's no iser to cook it again. Once the tea or the coffee on the bottom of your cup is left over from a previous hot cup of tea or coffee, you would be permitted to pour hot water there. But it, in general, it is still better, if you can, to dry out the bottom of your cup in all circumstances. Certainly, if it was just cold water from the tap, you definitely have to. But even if it's leftover coffee and tea, you don't have to. But lechatchila, it would be better to do so. That's talking about hot water from the urn into a cup, from a kli rishon into cold water. What about from a ladle? That's what we just spoke about. We said that if it's from a ladle from a kli rishon, there you cannot put a ladle into cold water. If you have something cold that was not yet cooked, and you would take a ladle and ladle hot soup onto that cold, uncooked item, let's say you have, let's say you like pepper in your soup. Let's say you like oregano in your soup. So you're going to put some pepper, oregano, you know, you're the last person to get the soup. Everyone's already eating their soup. You're waiting. So you figure at least you'll put the pepper, oregano in the bottom, and then when you finally get your soup, they'll pour the soup with a ladle into your plate, you'll at least have your pepper there already. What's happening there? You're having a ladle from a kli rishon going straight on to uncooked pepper, uncooked oregano. That ladle might have a din of a kli rishon, and therefore it's going to be usher to put that ladle, that hot ladle full of soup, onto oregano, pepper, or cold water for that matter. But as we said 4 minutes ago, if what I have on the bottom of my bowl is pre-cooked soup that I had for my first bowl, now I want to put a second bowl of hot soup on top of that liquid, here we could be makel, because again, many opinions hold that soup on the bottom of the bowl that was left from my first serving is already mevushel, and we assume that it can't be, I'm not violating bishel achar bishel, even though it's already cold, some opinions hold, and therefore later we will allow that. Okay, so we talked about hot water from a kli rishon, we talked about hot water from a kli sheni, from a ladle. What about hot water from a kli sheni? Can I take and this is probably the most applicable, I have a kli sheni, an urn into a cup. I want to take that cup and I want to pour it into whatever stuff that I have that I want to pour it onto. Let's say, for example, just to highlight the leniency we're about to say, I have a little bit of cold water in a cup. I take my an empty cup, and here I have from an urn, I have a cliche of boiling hot water. Can I pour this boiling hot water into the little bit of cup water in this cup? The answer is going to be yes, I can. Why? Because this is a cliche. We said that cliche does not have the ability to cook water. So certainly, if I'm pouring from a cliche into water, that will be okay. Because even the cliche itself doesn't have the capacity to cook water. Certainly, something that I pour from the cliche will not have the capacity to cook water. Yes. But since it's a machlokas, we would be machmer. It's a machlokas, and it's a question, right? We will be machmer normally on the ladle, unless we have some other thing to add to be lenient, like the fact that it was what you're pouring onto is something that was already cooked, or what you're pouring onto is a baked item that was already baked. Then we'd be lenient. But otherwise, we're going to be machmer by a ladle. We're always going to be machmer by a ladle and assume that it might be a kli rishon, unless you have some other leniency to join to it. Okay, that was the review, yes? Could you pour water from a hot kli sheni onto all your other raw foods? That's going to be a question that we discussed when we talked about how to make tea. We saw that there was a machlokas whether there exists a leniency called kli shlishi. Rav Moshe Feinstein said that we only know from the shot, from the Talmud, the things cooked in the kli sheni. We don't know anything more than that. And therefore, Rav Moshe Feinstein is makel and assumes that kli shlishi will not cook, and I assume he'll hold from a kli sheni will also not cook. However, there were other opinions, like that of the Mishnah Berurah, who said that if something is delicate and it's cookable, and we're not really sure what is delicate and what isn't delicate, so it's going to be a problem for those things that are delicate, even in a kli shlishi, if they're not cooked. So we'll go back to that question. Water is clear. What do we know doesn't cook in a kli sheni? Things that, what about other things, foods other than water? So that's a machlokas. How do we look at the status of other foods? Other liquids. Okay, when I say water, almost all liquids that you deal with, orange juice, honey, milk, lemon juice, all pasteurized, which means they've already been pre-cooked in the manufacturing process. So you always have that extra leniency that will be mutter to pour, even from a ladle onto those things, kalvachomer from a klisheni onto a real klisheni. Ladle might be a klisheni, might be a klisheni. But a real klisheni, certainly, you could pour on that, because according to many opinions, you could boil it up right now. Okay? Any more questions of Kli Rishon, Sheni, ladles? And then we could say, we'll miss you. Okay. Now, let's talk about stirring foods. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam she'hakol nehiyah bedvaro. We talked a little bit about stirring foods when we discussed it in the second or third shiur of our series, where we talked about the halachas of mikariv bishul, of accelerating cooking. I'm not going to get into the source of how we know that accelerating cooking is also considered cooking, but listen to this story that the Gemara in Beitza Daf Lamed Daled illustrates. Tanya, we learned in a brisa. Listen to the story. You know I don't want to get into any ethnic jokes, but the joke of a certain ethnicity of how many of them does it take to switch a light bulb? So we're going to do the same thing with how many Jews does it take to cook up a soup. Tanya, Leather Nebraisa, one person brings a flame or a coal. Another person brings the wood. Another person seals the pot. They seal the pot in a certain way when they cooked. Another person brings the water. Another person brings the spices. Another person stirs it. There are six people if you're listening. Kulon chayavin. Chayav, when it comes to Shabbos, means what? That's an isser d'araisa. So much so that you'd be chayav skila if there were edim and a hasra'a. If there are no edim and a hasra'a, and you did it, then you'd be chayav tashem. Or if you did it by mistake, you'd be chayav a korban chatas. In other words, we're talking about an isser d'araisa here. And if there's an isser d'araisa for somebody who brings the flame, somebody who brings wood for the flame, somebody who puts water into the pot on top of the flame, somebody who adds spices or foods into that, and the person who stirs it. If you stir uncooked foods, we see from this brisa that that's an iser mideoraisa. And that's very important to keep in mind. And the commentator's Rashba explains over there that what's the problem of magus? Why is magus, somebody who's stirring it, violate? What is he violating? Is it bishul? No, the guy who put the food inside is bishul. What did he add just by shaking it up? Because it's being mikariv bishulo. It's accelerating the bishul. And if you have food that would have cooked in 2 hours, and because you evened out the heat dispersion, you disperse the heat more evenly, it's going to cook more quickly, that will violate an iser d'oraisa of bishul. This, of course, only makes sense. You can only cook something if you're cooking it. If it's already cooked, so by stirring it, you're not making it cook, of course, there ought not be a problem, which we'll see in a moment. When we talk about stirring foods that are not cooked, that it's yechayev midaraisa, the Shulchan Aruch applies this not only to a pot that's on the flame. You have a chalent, you have a soup that you stir on the flame, there you're definitely going to be chayav midaraisa. The Shulchan Aruch applies it even after you took the soup, you took the chalent off the flame, you put it on the counter. Again, let's assume it is not cooked. Because once it's cooked, you're not doing anything. You're not cooking it. You're not being makariv bishul. You're not accelerating cooking if it's already fully cooked. So if it's not fully cooked, even if you take it off the flame and you stir it, that will still violate the issur d'oraisa. That's not common. Why? Because why would anyone take something that's not fully cooked off the flame? Once you take something that's not fully cooked off the flame, you're never, under any circumstance, allowed to put it back. So you're going to be left with uncooked food for Shabbos. So practically that is not going to come up, except in a scenario where you didn't realize what you were doing, which I'll talk about in a minute, because it can happen. The Shulchan Aruch, as he talks about this Isser called stirring, which in Hebrew is Megis, Mem Gimel, Yud Samach, Megis primarily is stirring, but the Shulchan Aruch is machmir even to spoon out. That means if I have something, again, we're talking about something that's not yet fully cooked. It's not fully cooked, and I just want to take a ladle of whatever that food is. Let's say I like my foods. If I get a steak, rare. So that's not fully cooked. But I like to eat it like that. So maybe some people like to eat their soup before it's fully cooked. Or they like to eat their chalent before they like crunchy beans in the chalent. They don't like everything to be soft and mushy. They like things with a little hot and spicy. Some people like hot and spicy. Some people like crunchy. So I like my beans crunchy. So I don't like when it's fully cooked and all mushy and mushy. I don't like mushy things. I like crunchy things. So if I'm that kind of person, so I'm going to take off my chalent when it's not mavushal koltzor, because it's not fully cooked. I'm not even allowed to spoon out from that chalent pot. Because what happens with my act of spooning? I'm not stirring, but just memelo, automatically, without even intending for it, the act of spooning out will, by definition, be some kind of mixing involved. But there, since it's only like, by the way, and ends up being that way automatic, it's only derabbanan. If I stir something that's not fully cooked, it would be deraisa. If I spoon out something that's not fully cooked, then it will be still also, says the Shulchan Aruch, but only drabbanah. So let me tell you an example where this can apply, and I hope it doesn't happen to you, but it almost happened to me about a month or 6 weeks ago, and I think I told this story, but I'll share it again. So Friday night, I like to taste my chalent, and I took the chalent off with the intention, as we're going to learn hopefully next in 2 weeks or so, with all the proper conditions I need to be able to return it to the crock pot base. I lifted off the cap and I took my spoon and I took a bean from the top and I chewed it and I said, uh-oh, this bean is not soft. And I quickly called my wife. And I said, dear wife, is this not fully cooked? Because if it's not fully cooked, we're not going to be able to put this back on. If we're not going to be able to put this back on, we don't have anything else to serve the guests tomorrow. So she tasted one. She said, no. It's not that it's not cooked. It's that kidney beans don't get as soft as other beans. She said, are you sure? And she says, yes, because my mother cooks kidney beans. And that is how they are fully cooked. It happens to be that if you leave it in a crock pot for 25 hours, regular crock pots, if you look at any crock pot, official slow cooker recipe books, they all say to leave something cooking between 6 and 8 hours. We Jews leave it for 20 to 23, 20, depending on early Shabbos or late Shabbos. We leave it on for twice that long. So we're used to, even when we do have kidney beans in the chalent, on Shabbos morning at 11:45 or at half past noon on Shabbos afternoon, then even the kidney beans are very super soft. But that's not the definition of fully cooked. Fully cooked is when it's properly cooked. You know, when you buy a can of Goya cooked beans, how crunchy are they going to be? They're going to be not as mushy as they are when you have them at Shabbos lunch after having sat in a crock pot for 20 hours. So, the psak was that they are fully cooked. Okay, it's true they'll get softer, but they are fully cooked. And let's pause there. Let's say it would have not been fully cooked. So I would not be able to put it back. So what would make sense for me to do? At least enjoy what I can now. Tomorrow's going to be cold, it's going to be miserable. Not cooked, I'm cold. I have a sister-in-law who has a policy that any chalent that's left after Shabbos lunch gets thrown at him automatically. That's except if they know that we're coming over Motzei Shabbos, in which case she puts it in a Ziploc bag so that I could take home because I like eating my chalent on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Not every night of the week, but until Thursday. My wife gets angry at me if it's after Tuesday. But I hope chalent could go at least till Thursday. Because Thursday night you have to clean out the chalent pot for the next Shabbos, so it makes sense. Like the Lechem HaPanim, you push in when they had the Lechem HaPanim in the Beis HaMikdash, there was never a moment that the Shulchan with the 12 trays were empty of Lechem HaPanim. When they had a new batch of lechem when they would eat the first batch of lechem apanim on Shabbos, they would have the new lechem apanim push the lechem apanim that was there off. The kohanim would eat the lechem apanim, but there'd be lechem apanim there. So chont is the same thing. Chont should always be full with chont. When you finish one, you just have to refill it with the other. So I'm stuck Friday night with my not fully cooked chont. If I wait till tomorrow, it's going to be miserable. It'll be cold and not cooked. So what am I going to do? I'll eat it now for the best. Again, it's probably a little cooked. It's just not a virtual cold circle. Wait a second. According to what we just said, the halachas of Magus of stirring are going to tell me that if something is not fully cooked, I'm not even allowed to spoon it out. That means what? This challenge I can't even salvage from my Friday night, you know, consolation prize of having, you know, 3/4 cooked challenge. Why? Because the stirring, the spooning, forget stirring, even just spooning it out will be usher, albeit only Drabbanan, but even the spooning out will be usher Drabbanan. What's the solution? You have to wait until it goes before Yad Seledispo, until it goes below Yad Seledispo, so that your spooning, or even your stirring, won't cause any cooking. But once it goes below Yad Seledispo, and it's not fully cooked, you know, there's not much to talk about. Okay, so until now, we were discussing only foods that were still not fully cooked, and therefore there would be an issur d'oraisa to stir it, or an issur d'rabbanan to spoon it. Excuse me. Let's talk about foods that are fully cooked. I have fully cooked challant. I have a fully cooked soup. Any, yeah, question.
I'm not sure what you mean by fully cooked. Like, cooked enough to eat.
Okay, so there are three, as when we talk about cookedness, we could, cookedness is a gerund, is that correct? Do I have any English majors? No English majors? No, really? Not one English major? You're all occupational therapists? Okay. Where's Betsy Wolf? She's an editor. Okay. So I think cookedness is a gerund. If I'm wrong, you'll never know. So there are three levels of cookedness when we talk about cooking. There is machal ben drusai, which is either a half to a third cook. It's machlokas. That's a minimal amount of food that makes it just edible. Then there's what we call fully cooked, which is whatever the recipe says. The recipe says bake on 350 for an hour and a half. So baked on 350 for an hour and a half, that gets you fully cooked. Then after that, there's something that's called mitztamek viyachalo, meaning like cholent. You can have officially it's fully cooked, but the beans are still a little, they're not soft. It gets better and better and better. The meat gets tenderer and tenderer when it bakes longer and longer and longer. And it improves even after it's fully cooked. That's called mitztamek viyachalo. That's only going to be significant to something that we're going to talk about in 2 weeks, but not for tonight. But tonight, all that we need care about is that middle level, which is whatever the official timing for whatever people call fully cooked. It's not just edible. It's more than edible. It's proper. It's the way you'd want to serve it to your guests. That's fully cooked. If it's half cooked, but edible, then there's a machlokas rishonim if you're allowed to help it fully cook. We're machmer. So that's why I'm worried that even though it's 3/4 cooked, there are those who say that if I put it back to reach the full cookedness, that even though it was edible, but now that I'm helping it to reach full cookedness, many rishonim will say that that's an issur d'oraisa. So I don't do that. Okay. So I have my fully cooked challant, and even when my challant is fully cooked, I still want to get, I know with me, if the barley of the challant is going to be on the bottom, I'm going to end up on Shabbos morning that the bottom level of the challant pot will be completely burnt. So I want to shift things so that the barley is not on the bottom, the barley sort of moves up, and other things are on the bottom because for whatever reason, barley, maybe because there's small particles, I don't really know why, they get sort of burnt on the bottom. Or even better yet, whatever I just, you know, shift from the bottom to the top, top to the bottom, if I do that a few times over Shabbos, that will prevent anything from burning because there's nothing that's against the heating element, the bottom of the crock pot, the heating element, for too long. So can I do that? So theoretically it should be fine. Why? Because if it's fully cooked, what rule have we been working with for since the very first week of this shiur, second week? Ein bishol achar bishol. There's no prohibition to cook something that's already cooked. If something is fully cooked, you can't do anything more to it. So there should be no problem at all for me on Shabbos, while my crock pot is in the crock pot, for me to just stir it and make things, you know, move, shift things. If I have a soup and I want to make sure that the top of the soup, and let's say the chicken's floating on top and I want the chicken to be floating on the bottom, or the carrots are floating on top and I want the carrots to be, whatever it is, I should be able to stir it without a problem. That's what ought to be. Because once it's fully cooked, ein bishul achar bishul. However, there is a mysterious, stringent opinion of the Kolbo. The Kolbo is one of the Rishonim. And even though we don't really understand him, even though he is a das yachad, he is a lone opinion, nevertheless he is cited lahalacha, we are machmer for the Kolbo's opinion. And the Kolbo says the following. He says, as long as anything is on the flame, you cannot stir it. Does it make sense? The Mishnah Berurah and the Shaar HaTzion asks, does it make sense? If I have something that's fully cooked, I'm allowed to recook it. I'm allowed to put it on a flame again if it's fully cooked and still hot. I could take it off and put it back on a flame. I could cook it again if I have a matzo ball that was cooked on Thursday night. I'm allowed to put it into a burning hot pot of challah, for a pot of soup. Because once it's cooked, it's not going to cook again. So that's not a problem. But you're going to tell me that stirring is going to be a problem? It doesn't make sense. Ein bishul achar bishul. Once the food is cooked, what could be the problem? Nevertheless, even though we don't really understand it, we are machmir, and therefore anything that is on a flame, because of this Kolbo's opinion, can never be stirred. Okay? But we can't leave it as a mystery. What could the Kolbo have been thinking, enough that it made it lahalach, and we are machmir for it? Why is the Kolbo saying we accept to be machmir for this opinion, that I can't stir something on the flame? It's fully cooked, yes. It looks like cooking. Explain what you mean? I'm not saying you're right or wrong, you might be right, but... Meaning, I'm just going to put some words in your mouth and you'll tell me if you meant to say what the Tiferet Shlomo says. So what you mean to say is sort of like maybe the following, that I know that my challah pot is fully cooked, and of course this should not be any issue for me to stir it, but the guy who's watching from a distance doesn't know that it's fully cooked. He thinks that it's half cooked or raw, and he sees me doing it, so he's going to come to do it to his raw pot. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Excellent. I could have said it better. Yes, that sounds like what the Tiferet Shlomo suggests, that actually he says, no, I'm sorry, I could have said it better. I like what you said very much, but the Tiferet Shlomo says it a little bit differently. The Tiferet Shlomo says that you sometimes assume that something is fully cooked. Right? Like me with my challah Friday night, I assumed it was cooked. Otherwise, I would never have taken it off Chas V'Shalom, because I wouldn't be able to put that on. So I assumed it was cooked. Sometimes you make a mistake. While it's on the flame, you don't always analyze carefully before you touch things where it's holding. So you might think it's fully cooked. And let's say, God forbid, it's not fully cooked. You're going to give it a stir. What's that going to be? That's going to be an Issa D'Oraisa. At least a question of an Issa D'Oraisa. So therefore, most of the time, you don't make those mistakes. The Kolbo is worried that you're going to make that mistake. This is the Tiferet Shlomo's suggestion for the explanation for the stringent opinion of the Kolbo. And therefore, we're not going to allow you ever to stir anything while it's on a flame, because you might once in a million years not check carefully or mistakenly stir something that is not fully cooked. That's one opinion, as to understand why the Kolbo has this chumrah. Igros Moshe, after quoting that opinion, it quotes another opinion. This is an Igros Moshe, or Chaim Chelek Dalid, Siman Ayin Dalid, which I think I mentioned once, or Shimon Eider, Zichron Levracha. Shimon Eider, I think, at one point went to YU. Then he went to learn Lakewood for many years, and he was the first person to publish any English halachas svarim. Among them were Hilchos Shabbos, two or three volumes. And in his compilation of that sefer, he went to Rav Moshe with about 35, I mean, lots of questions, but there are 35 questions that are all like cutting edge halachal mice. Like, I know there's machlokes this and this, and a very common scenario, what do I do? And that list of 35 questions all made their way to the back of Rav Shimon Eider's book, and also to the Igros Moshe, Chelek Dalid, Siman Ayin Dalid, that I just mentioned to you. And we're going to quote a few of them in the next few minutes, actually, from that little, the short little snippets of questions that he asked Rav Moshe, halacha l'maisa. So Rav Moshe, when he was talking about, do we have to be machmer for this kolbo, this stringent opinion, to not stir anything that's on a flame, Rav Moshe says, yes, we are machmer for it. As I said, he gives the answer that I gave, because maybe somebody will mistakenly think it's fully cooked, but it's not yet fully cooked, and God forbid stirs something that's not fully cooked. Rav Moshe adds another interesting possibility. Rav Moshe says, let's say, picture a stew, or a challenge. So, in my challenge, I have potatoes and I have onions. What do you think is going to cook more quickly? What?
Onions.
Onions are definitely going to cook more quickly. Because maybe there's more water content, because they're flimsier, because I cut them smaller. So, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, you have a pot that's fully cooked. What does it mean it's fully cooked? That means you taste it and it tastes normal. Maybe it tastes normal because most of it is fully cooked. But there might be that pocket in the middle, deep in the recesses, in the heart of that potato, that is still not yet fully cooked. But the whole challah tastes fully cooked to you because, you know, most of it is fully cooked. All the smaller things are fully cooked. But there might be some little chunk, some little, I don't want to use the word cell, but like some little bits, I guess that's the best word, some little bits that are not yet fully cooked. You assume that it is all fully cooked because you're following Rav. You're following what the general flavor and the general texture of the whole dish is. But there might be little bits here or there that are not, and when you stir it, you're going to cause those little bits that have not yet been cooked to cook. And that concern that it might happen and, you know, might be a situation, that's the concern of the kolbo. That's Ramosha's second explanation. With these two explanations, we're going to come out with the following kula. Again, one concern is that maybe it is not... the first concern was that maybe I think it's cooked, but it's not really cooked. The second concern is that, of course it's fully cooked, but there might be some bits and pieces that aren't in the middle of the chunks. Based on these two reasonings, and this is something that we mentioned about 5 weeks ago, if I have a broth or boiling water or something that's clear, consomme, well, I don't have to be worried about either concern. Is it fully cooked or not? Well, I know that it's boiling, so it's fully cooked. Are there bits? There are no bits in my broth. My broth, by definition, broth doesn't have bits in it. It doesn't have pieces. It doesn't have chunks. It's just liquid. Based on that, halacha l'maaseh, Moshe is meikel, whatever the two reasons for the kolbo might be, they would not apply to a broth. And therefore, if you have a broth on the flame, it is permitted l'chatchila to go ahead and stir it even while it is sitting on the flame. Halacha l'maaseh. Of course, once it's fully cooked. If it's not yet cooked, so you're bringing the top, the liquid on top closer to the bottom, and it's going to heat more quickly. But if it's fully cooked, then you don't have to be concerned about maybe there is, you know, that you're mistaking your seeds boiling, or you know that there are no pieces to that you have to be concerned about, and you're supposed to look at chila. Any questions about that? About the chumra of the kolbo and the kula that we have based on two reasonings of broth. Please. Great. We're going to talk about a hot plate and a blech in about a minute. Yes. Yeah, Michal.
When the kolbo is covered,
that's a good point. Once you have this concern for the kolbo, then these concerns, you could be worried that matzo ball that we were talking about for the past month and a half, maybe the middle of that matzo ball is not yet fully cooked. The answer is, theoretically you're right. But keep something in mind. I worked very hard and got very dramatic to try to explain to you why this makes sense. Really, the whole thing doesn't make sense. Really, it shouldn't be. This kobo shouldn't be. This whole chumra shouldn't be. Once something's cooked, it's cooked. There's no problem doing anything. You could cook it again. Certainly you could stir it. The problem is that we are machmir for this kolbo for whatever reason. Rav Moshe is trying valiantly to at least give some logical, you know, he's grabbing at straw to try to figure out why we might be able to possibly explain, maybe we could understand a little bit of this mystery. So he did his job, and I gave it all across in a way that it was convincing. Thank you. But you're right. Really, these are not real concerns. Once something is cooked, it's really cooked. So Rav Moshe makes your point, and he says that as much as we are concerned about these concerns, we're only going to take it as far as the kolbo said it. He only said it while it's on the fire. Stirring something while it's on the fire. More than that, he didn't say, and we don't understand even what he says. So we're not going to add anything more machmir than what he said, but we don't even understand his more basic. We're not going to be more machmir than a chumah that we don't even understand in the first place. Okay? Clear broth on the flame, you can stir. Yes, excellent point. Yeah, if you have a clear broth, what's coming out, according to this, you should be able to spoon out with a ladle straight from the flame. Thank you. If it's a clear broth, a consomme, you are permitted, lechatchila, to take, if you're allowed to stir it, kal vachomer, you're allowed to spoon it out. Right? Because stirring originally, when things weren't fully cooked. Stirring was deraisa and spooning was only derabanan. So here, where it is fully cooked and we're not worried, yes, you could serve your, you could ladle out your broth while it's still in the flame. Excellent. If something is fully cooked, putting the lid on the flame might be because it's cold, but I don't remember. I don't have it clear right now. Sorry. Any more questions about this so far? Okay. So let's not talk, let's put behind us broth. Now we're just going to talk about regular crock pots, regular soups that have, you know, vegetables or chicken in it, any other dish. We said that while it's on the flame, it's going to be a problem, even if it's fully cooked. Let's now talk about something that is fully cooked that I take off the flame. So I have a pot of soup, I have a chalon pot that I take off the flame. Here, of course, you could spoon out, that's certainly clear, right? If I have a chalon pot that I took off the crock pot, I took, like here, I took it off the base, or I have a soup pot that I took off the flame, so of course I could, that's how we always serve all of our food, we ladle it out. There are those who might want to be machmir not to stir it while it's in that kli that it was cooked in. You don't have to be machmir for that. There are those who like to. You don't have to be machmir for that. While it's on the flame, of course, if it's a regular food like a challent, you're not even allowed to serve it. Back to what Ms. Krieger said, that if it's a broth, you're allowed to spoon it out, but if it's chunky, you're not allowed to spoon out while it's on the flame, even if it's fully cooked, because of this kolba. Now, let's talk about a certain scenario that's a little bit more complicated. And let's see how far we take this kolbo. Again, we said this is really a chumrah. It doesn't make much sense. But we still to make sure that we don't, you know, stir nor spoon out from foods that are on the blech, that are on the flame. Let's say the following. Let's say I have my crock pot on the base. Or I have a soup pot on a flame and there's no blech. So I take out my crock pot, I want to taste a little bit Friday night. I take it out with all the five conditions for chazar, which we're going to learn about in 2 weeks. I eat my little bit, now I want to put it back. I'm only allowed to put it back though if there's a blech. So if I have a silver foil, pre-cut silver foil, it's always good to have a few cut pieces of pre-cut silver foil. I can make a blech right this second on Shabbos, Friday night at 11 o'clock at night, put some silver foil inside the crock base so it's coming out from the top, from all the sides. And then I have my blech and I could put my crock pot back. Because I'm putting it back onto a blech, which is how you have to return things if you ever take it off the fire and put it back on the fire. What happens if I don't have any pre-cut silver foil? So I'm taking it out, I'm not going to be able to put it back. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to take it out because otherwise we're not going to have challen for lunch. Because if I take it off now, I can't put it back because there's no blech there. So here, the Chazon Ish said the following. The Chazon Ish says, if I'm in such a circumstance as I just described, that if I were to take it out, the crock pot out, I will not be able to put it back, for example, because there's no blech and I don't have any aluminum foil to make a blech, then the Chazon Ish says, we will let go of this chumrah. We'll be lenient and say, you know, you don't have another choice. You can't have your Friday night challen tasting if you're going to be machmir for the kolbo, because you can't take the pot off and spoon out like you normally do and put it back on. So there's no option but to spoon out while it's on the flame. Oh, but the kolbo, says the Chazon Ish, yes, the kolbo, but the kolbo is only a chumrah. And therefore, the Chazon Ish has a kula, which is nice, because again, the Chazon Ish is usually a machmir, so when he gives you a kula, you know, take it all the way. Take it to the touchdown. So, according to the Chazon Ish, if there's a scenario that you'll want something in that pot, but you're not going to be able to do it properly, meaning take it off the flame, spoon it out, and put back, for whatever reason, because there's no blach. So, says the Chazon Ish, you can spoon out while it's on the flame. Again, he won't let you stir, but in terms of spooning out, even though the kolbo says you shouldn't touch anything, stir or spoon out while it's on the flame, if there's no other option, then the Chazon Ish gives you this kula, because anyway the kolbo is only chumrah, that we didn't really understand, because it's already fully cooked. Nothing could happen by my stirring or spooning out. So therefore, since it is only a chumrah, the Chazon Ish, when I have no other choice, will allow me to spoon out the chalent while it is on the crock pot is in the base. That's the kula of the Chazon Ish. Let me tell you a story from when I was in high school. And Rav Moshe has something to say about that story. And based on my analysis of Rav Moshe, it sounds like he's going to be arguing on this kula that we just had from the Chazon Ish that would allow me to spoon out. The story that happened in high school, I went to Camp Morasha. Camp Morasha has a learning program called Morasha Kolo. I'm sure some of you may have heard of it. And the custom in Morasha Kolo is that Friday night, they cheat and they steal chalent from the kitchen. That's not really stealing if you have 50 people doing it every Friday night. It's just part of the... Okay, so now if you have, let's say, a campus with 150 people, the chalent pot is quite large. It's probably about 10 to 20 to 30 gallons big. Probably 20 to 30 gallons. It's about 4 feet high, about 3 feet wide. That's the chalent pot, and it's on this, I won't call it a tripod, on this burner that's about half the size of this table. And they have this pot, which is also, you know, a little... almost half the size of the table, sitting. And what do? We get three big muscular guys to take it and move it, you know, sort of to the edge, off the flame, this gigantic pot, and it's not in the flame anymore, and they're holding it for dear life. Somebody spoons out enough for everybody, and the three big brawny guys put it back on the flame. And that's how it should be. They do the chazara, like we're going to learn in 2 weeks, properly. Let's say 1 week, the big brawny guys aren't there. You have small scrawny guys, not big brawny guys. And they're not strong enough to lift that chalent pot up. So there's only one way that they're going to be able to get chalent on Friday night. Shabbos lunch is easy. They're just going to say, I guess they're going to have to take it off the flame and leave it off the flame. That they're going to have to do. But Friday night, they're going to have to take it off, put it back on. It's too heavy. They can't. So what's the only thing that they could do? Could they knock out the kolbo and be lenient against the kolbo's chumrah and just spoon out while it's on the flame? So, the Igros Moshe, that same tshuva that I mentioned earlier, the list of shailos from Shimon Eider, Rav Moshe says that if it's too heavy and you can't take it off the flame and put it back on the flame like you're supposed to, then I'm sorry, you're not allowed to spoon out while it's on the flame because of the kolbo. Because it's too heavy, you have no option but to spoon out. Spooning out is aser. The kolbo says it's aser. That's Rav Moshe's case. So it sounds to me that Rav Moshe is going against the kula that the Chazon Ish told us 3 minutes ago. The Chazon Ish said that for whatever, well there, the Chazon Ish is not talking about a physical problem, but a halakhic problem. There's a halakhic problem for me to take that crock pot out and put it back, because I won't be able to put it back because there's no blech there. So therefore the Chazon Ish said, since I have this halakhic problem, let's be makel against the kolbo and just spoon out what you want. Rav Moshe is not talking about a halakhic problem, he's talking about a physical problem. I don't have the strength to lift up this pot. And he says, could you just spoon out because there are no other options? Rav Moshe says, no, you can't spoon out. So it seems to me that we have machlokas, Igros Moshe with the Chazon Ish, and I'm sorry I did not do my homework to find out, to speak to the Rabbanim, which way to follow. So if somebody follows up with me this week, I could try to get back to you as far as what to do halacha maisa. But I'm assuming you could be makel, because again, the kolbo itself is a big chiddush, and onik Shabbos, Friday night chalent, is a mitzvah. And I don't think I've ever mentioned it. Do you know that the Baal HaMa'or, did I mention why you're zocha to Olam Haba for eating challenge? No? Oh, this is totally serious. This is not a joke. Is there anyone who didn't eat challenge yet who wants to eat challenge cooking before I continue? Okay. The Baal HaMa'or, which is one of the great Rishonim, had to know that he was great because he wrote his parish when he was 17 years old. When I was 17 years old, I could barely read a page of Gemara, so he must have been really great. So the Baal HaMa'or, one of the very big Rishonim, the Ramban argues with him, and he writes the following. Ha'ochel b'Shabbos chamin challenge zocha l'keitz hayamin will be zocha to the end of days. What is it about challenge? I mean, we all understand that challenge is spiritual in a different kind of sense, which says we don't have to go into a base medrash, but how so? Why is it that if you eat challenge on Shabbos, you'll be zocha l'keitz hayamin? It doesn't say if you eat challenge on Monday night, you'll be zocha l'keitz hayamin. You never know. You might want to try just in case. But why is it Hazochel Ochel B'Shabbos Chaim Zochel Ketzayam? And the answer is because the Tzedukim, who had a literal reading of Tana of Chumash, read the pasuk of not having flames on Shabbos. Lo Sava Ru Eish B'Chomash V'Seichem B'Yom HaShabbos. The Tzedukim who denied Torah Shabbal Peh read that pasuk to mean you cannot have a flame on Shabbos. I mean, if you turn a flame on Friday afternoon, it cannot stay on for Shabbos. And therefore, if you're a Tzeduki Karoi, you would never have any warm food on Shabbos. But what happens if you're a traditional, from Orthodox person? We read, based on Torah Shabbal Peh, that what does the pasuk mean? Lo sevaru esh b'chomash l'sechav yom ha-shabbos. Lo sevaru, you're not allowed to ignite a fire. It doesn't mean you can't have a fire be maintained or stay on Shabbos. You're not allowed to ignite a fire. That's what the pasuk means. And therefore, what do we do when we have hot foods on Shabbos? It doesn't have to be just chalm. Yes, it's chalm, but could be hot tea, hot challenge, or any other hot food that is staying on the fire on Shabbos. We're demonstrating by eating this hot food that we are believers in Torah Shabbal Peh against the perspective of the Karam and the Tzedukim. And therefore, Ha'ochel b'Shabbos Chamin, Zochel l'Keitz Hayamin. So, we said that it's a mitzvah challenge. It's a very big mitzvah challenge, as we just explained. Onik Shabbos and the Baal HaMa'or of being Zochel on Haba. And therefore, since the question at hand is a kolbo, which is really a chum we don't really understand, you could probably be mekel and just leave it. If I'd assume in this machlok is chazanish and remosha, I think we could probably be mekel like the chazanish. And if I'm not able to take the pot off to just spoon out what I need, delicately from the top, carefully, so as not to cause any additional stirring the net more than necessary, that probably would be mutter. That would be what seems to me. Let's finish off with one or two more points about stirring and spooning out from pots that are on the fire. Let's say, and this might be what Aliza, if I don't get to what you asked me, let me know. Let's say I have a blech. We'll talk about a hot plate in a minute, but let's talk about a blech. I have a square blech, and under one of the four corners of the blech, there's a flame from my stovetop. And I have a pot that's directly on the fire. Well, that's the kolbo. I'm not allowed to stir it. I'm not allowed to spoon out. Let's say I have a pot that's not directly on the fire, because the soup pot is on the fire. So the chalon pot, which is going to be for lunch, is right next to the soup pot. So it's in a place where it's still cooking, still getting staying hot, but it's not directly on the flame. So am I able to spoon out directly from the pot or to mix that pot? After all, this chumra of the kolbo that I'm not allowed to stir was only things that are on the flame. Once I remove it from the flame, there's no problem in stirring or spooning out. So now I have sort of a middle. I have a duck-billed platypus. I have a middle ground. I have a gray. It's not on the flame, so maybe I could stir it. But it's not really off the flame. It's on the blech right next to the flame. So here, Rav Moshe, again, in that same list of tshuvas from Rav Shimon Eider, Rav Moshe says that the only problem that we are worried about is while it's sitting on the flame, and therefore, if it is not situated on top, vertically, in a vertical space above the flame, it is permitted to spoon out and to mix on the blech. So therefore, if I have something that's on the blech and very hot, piping hot, but it's not directly over the flame, I am permitted on Shabbos to take off the lid, spoon out, and that's not considered on top of the fire. Accordingly, I will finish with this point. Rabbi Yashiv comes up with a very creative idea based on what we just said. Rabbi Yashiv is quoted, I don't know if it's written anywhere, but I mean, it's quoted by probably verbal communication. I mentioned the Sefer, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, the Shavuos Yitzchak, who's a Talmud, Yitzchak Drazi, from Eretz Yisrael, is a Talmud of Rabbi Yashiv, and he quoted Rabbi Yashiv as the following. Let's say I have a pot of soup that is on a black and directly over the fire. Directly over the fire. So I'm not allowed to stir, I'm not allowed to spoon out of it. Says Rabbi Yashiv, the halacha is, which we'll learn, I don't know, next week or in a few weeks, I'm allowed to move this pot from on top of the fire to a hot place on the blech, and then also move it right back. That's going to be mutter in terms of moving things on the blech. So accordingly, Rabbi Yashiv says, you want to spoon out without lifting things up and taking them off the fire and on the fire, just shove with your hand the soup pot off from above the fire to the other part of the blech, where it's still going to be hot, it's still going to stay hot. Spoon out whatever you need, and shove it back onto the fire. That will be mutter. However, and I'll tell you a question in a moment, however, this kula will only apply to a blech where there is a place where there's a fire, and defined places where there is no fire. A plata, a Shabbos hot plate, on the other hand, which has a heating element underneath the metal cover, that entire surface is considered like being on the fire, and you don't have any possibilities of shoving it here or shoving it there. So if you have a blech, you could shove it, you could shove your soup, you can shove your soup pot off the fire, ladle out, push it back on the fire. But if you have a plata, there's nowhere to push it to because the whole thing is like the fire. We'll take questions in a minute.